Hi, I'm Chase Bunker, but you're not here for me. You're here for my guest. He is an actor and comedian. You've seen him on Chappelle's Show, The Wire, and most recently, the popular podcast Kill Tony. You can see him at the Comedy Zone on October 3rd through the 5th. Tickets on sale now. He is Donnell Rawlins. Donnell, how are you?
I just want to start by saying, boo! I meant Duval!
Oh, good. You got the memo that that's what we say every show. Good.
Yeah, I got the memo some years ago, and I you were off air. You were telling me experience that Justin Timberlake had, and our feelings felt kind of parallel to that, because the first time I heard it, I didn't know what was going on, but then I realized it was a level of appreciation, and I got so caught up into it that I would tell it last time I was there. I would tell a joke, and the crowd would go crazy. Duval, that was their way of saying we appreciate you and we love you. So I'm excited to get there, and I'm excited to continue that chant.
That chant is already 20 times better than Liam Cohen's first chant, because that one, I don't know if you heard it, the Jaguars coach, when he first tried it, it was the most awkward, also probably the whitest thing I have ever seen.
Oh, you know, it's so funny. You're talking about awkward moments. Some years ago, I was on tour with Dave Chappelle, and Elon Musk was, he's a good friend of Dave. And this was right when Elon Musk had laid off so many people out there in the Silicon Valley, and they was letting them have it, right? And I went on stage, and I looked at Elon Musk, and I just, you know, it's a phrase that I use on the Chappelle Show to end every show. It was like, I'm rich, and you say it, right? And I was like, I was whispering in his ear. I was like, say this, say this. And he butchered it. He was like, I'm rich, right? And everybody I was like, oh my God. But I felt weird even using that phrase, looking at one of the richest men in the world, and to coach him to say that, it was so much comedy that I didn't think I needed, but I got it.
Is Elon Musk a type of person that like can't take a joke, or did he just kind of feel uncomfortable the entire time getting roasted?
I think he could take a joke, and I say it's so interesting because I think deep down inside, he's like a wealthy guy and has done so much in the world. I meet these people, and for some reason, it's the fascination of stand-up comedy that's very intriguing to them. And I was like, I saw what I will say, the first time I met Elon Musk, I was in a room with him in Austin, right? And I never thought that I would meet a person that I could look at and say, he could probably have sex with everybody in this room. and including myself, is the price is right. I'm trying to get a rocket, buddy. I don't know what you call it, but I was like, do you got a rocket? Do you know I got a rocket? How are we going to get a rocket?
I like how you're just like, I mean, like $10 million to $10 million. I mean,
tomato, 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 tomato. But every time I've had the opportunity to be around it, what I've seen of him, and I don't know him in personal business relationship at all, but it seemed like he was like a cool guy. So, you know, and I've had some good experiences with some of the strangest people out here. So it was a good time. But I'm telling you, listening to Elon Musk get booed by 15,000 people at one time is crazy.
I mean, is that the worst thing for him? Like, what do you think he'd rather have? Like, you know, getting booed by 15,000 people or just one of his Tesla dealerships just getting caught on fire?
I think that's hurt his feelings, because you think like you're on top of everything, and it's one thing that you think that would work for you doesn't work. I think that he wanted people to see another side of him. But it's not a good idea to go on stage in San Francisco after you just laid off 8,000 employees. You know what I mean? Doesn't make no sense. What do they say? Tough crowd.
Yeah. just a little bit. Is that the weirdest show that you've ever performed? You've been doing this for so long. Like, was that show the weirdest show that you've ever been a part of?
No, not really. I think one of the most interesting shows I've ever been a part of, it was some years ago, right? And it was this bar in Manhattan, right? And it was a lesbian bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me like a piece of meat, and they were vegans. You know what I mean? Like they looked at me like, you know, this is our diet, right?
Is it just one of those, like, they just weren't laughing, they just stare at you and like the entire time?
Yeah, they were looking, and it was so interesting because when I perform, like my good friend Dave Spade, he said, you know, it's our job to make fun of the things that are troubling the world. And I have a fan base. I try to connect with everybody. It's not like I want people on the left, the right, the gender, anybody. I like, so I'm really cautious on the things that I say. And I was like, with these women, they just, it didn't matter what I was going to say. They just weren't going to connect with me because I was a guy. And it was unfortunate because I really tried my best to give people, you know, a good time. But that was like a very interesting show. I didn't learn anything from it, but I was like, okay, let's chalk that up as an experience and keep it moving, you know?
How do you respond to just like moments like that when it comes to like the crowd is just essentially just like not on your side. They just stare at you. I don't know if like silence is worse than booing, but like how do you handle those situations?
Well, you hit it on the head. Silence is way worse than booing. Booing, you can react to it. It's an emotion. But to tell a joke and people stare at you, that could make that time on that clock go a lot faster. But I will say that I've been doing it for over 30 years, and I don't get too many of those experiences. I really consider myself a natural at it. This is my God-given talent that I'm able to connect with and make a living. But I've had shows where, you know, I feel like I wasn't as connected as I wanted to be. And in those cases, what I'll do is just try to slow down, backtrack, and try to, you know, start over. Or sometimes when you're doing your show and the bits that you prepared, if they're not working, like I mentor people, I'm like, sometimes you got to shift gears. If that's not working, you have to abandon those. And what you have to do is somebody's going to be a sacrifice in that front row. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm sorry, but you are about to get roasted like you've never thought. I've done that before. And they're like, why are you picking on me? I'm like, I didn't have nothing else to do, bro. You're right there. And as long as they laugh, and I'll apologize and have a drink with you later. But right now, I got to go with the majority. And if the majority's not laughing at me, they're going to laugh at you. But I think you've been doing it so long, there's not too many experiences that you haven't seen before. And it's like, you know how to handle the situation. Okay, they're not feeling me. Let me reevaluate it. Let me back up. Let me try a different direction. But I think the more experiences you have, they will keep you out of a horrible situation.
Speaking of, you were talking about like doing some of your bits. How long do you workshop a joke before like you get comfortable with like taking it out on the road?
I don't, like, you hear people say, well, I go to these rooms to work out, to get ready for the road. But I do so many shows that like every time I go on stage, it's a workout. Every time I go on stage, I'm going to try some new material. I usually try to have my show probably about 50 or 60% of things that I want to talk about. And then I like try to leave myself open for something that's like that happens in the moment. Lenny Bruce once said years ago that your act is for when the other situation, your personality doesn't work. And it's times that, you know, as a touring comedian, you could do stuff long enough where it kind of like boring to you. And sometimes, even this last week, I was like, you know what? My first 20 minutes, I just want to just go for it and just see what happens. See if I can connect with the audience. See if I can take this new premise I was thinking about it and give it a shot. And you got to be comfortable to be able to listen to that silence and don't let it throw you off. And just like, you know, you control it. And you control the energy of the crowd.
Part of my ignorance on this, when it comes to doing multiple shows, do you have to have like a whole nother set ready? So like if the 7:15 show gets set A and it's the 9:45 show gets set B, or are you able to kind of get away with doing the same set for both shows?
It's all on the performer. You know, like, you know, I could do like one pretty much the same set, but I like to just challenge myself. The audience knows when you're doing some material that you've probably done before. But sometimes you get those magical moments where something is happening right on the spot. Mm-hmm. When I was preparing for my special, A New Day, I was preparing to do 45 minutes, but because during the pandemic, there was no place that was going to allow me to do 45 minutes set, right? So what I had to do was I had to break it down, and I was like, I'm going to do 3 15-minute sets. So I would do 15 minutes at one club, do another 15 at the other club. So it was always a different rotation of me trying to put something new into it.
You've been doing, as I said, you've been doing this for a long time. Do you ever feel the need, like whenever you're out in public, that you have to just be on, like, oh, I got to be the Donnell Rollins that you see on like all the podcasts and all that stuff? Or are you able to just kind of like, you know, tone it down a little bit?
I really try to save my energy and performance for the stage. I'm a guy that's been funny his entire life, and I do tell people sometimes, I mean, if you really want to laugh, you know, I mean, I know you want to pay a ticket to see me, but just hang out with me for a day. Because my brain is a comedic brain. It's like I'm thinking about what's funny, what's funny in the moment. But then I meet some people, and they be like, man, this dude's kind of laid back. I thought you were a comedian. They want me to be like, bah, 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 bah. But it's really the mood that I am. I try to live my life where everything is a joke. I remember once somebody said, do you think everything is a joke? I'm like, I'm a comedian. Of course I think everything is a joke. Do you tell that to an accountant? Do you think everything is numbers? Yes, everything is numbers. This is what I do for a living. And I have my brand. It's very, like, on edge, but not going over the limit. Like, someone asked me once, they said, Donnell, can a joke be too soon? I said, in some cases, a joke can be too soon, but it never can be too soon for a funny observation. And that's what you get when you come see my show.
Whenever you tell people that you do stand-up comedy and all that, like, do people approach you like, oh, I think this could be a good joke, and they usually just, like, pitch you something just incredibly awful?
Oh, I shut that down completely. When somebody comes to me and tells me I got a joke, I was like, don't do it, please, because you might not get the response that you want. I'm like, let me do the joke. But that's just usually people, like when they see me on the street, whatever, it's like, oh, man, that's the guy for TV. But they want it, even if it's for a second or 10 seconds or a minute or a 4-minute conversation. They just want to kind of connect to you in some kind of way. That's why I'm always engaging when I go out. I hear some celebrities say, well, I don't want so-and-so. Well, if you don't want to, this is what you chose. And if you don't want to be treated a certain way or people to approach you, you might want to stay in the house. But if I go out, I know I'm accessible to people, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I'm usually like cool with people when I meet them.
You were a writer on Chappelle's Show, along with Dave Chappelle, of course, Neil Brennan, Charlie Murphy, Nick Kroll, and Paul Mooney on occasion. I imagine that had to be one of the funniest writer's rooms in television history.
But the thing about it wasn't really a writer's room. It was just life. It would be some of the funniest things we came up with, just conversation. One of the biggest sketches on Chappelle's Show, True Hollywood Stories, we would just have lunch. And Charlie would tell us these stories, and we were like, there's no way this is true. There's no way. You got to be lying. And that turned into, like, comedy. I was having a conversation with Neil Brennan once, and I was talking about, man, I don't want to keep it real no more. I want to sell out. I said, because keeping real goes wrong. Every time I hear about somebody selling out, I was like, oh, this guy moved out of the city, went to the suburbs, got a wife, kid, he sold out. But then I hear this story. Yo, remember Lil Ray Ray, Murder Mike? Man, he just stabbed somebody. He's doing 30 years, man. He kept it real. And that was just out of a casual conversation, became a big sketch that was a part of that show. But we would just, like, it would be, because the idea of Chappelle's Show, it was Dave basically opening up his joke book and making sketches about it. And that's what it was. Our lives, our joke, and just figuring out to make that translate into funny sketches.
You can see him at the Comedy Zone October 3rd through the 5th. Tickets on sale now. Before we go, Donnell, I want to ask you the same 10 questions I ask all my guests here. Are you ready?
Am I ready?
Yes.
If I'm not ready, I know a good answer for it.
All right. Here we go. These are inspired by the late, great James Lipton. Here we go. What's the most played song right now on your playlist?
Something's got a hold on me lately. And I don't know myself anymore. Feels like the walls are all closing in. And the devil's knocking at my door. Oh, out of my mind. How many times did I tell you I'm no good at being alone? It's taking its toll on me. Trying my best to keep from tearing the skin off my bones. Don't you know I lose control? That is number one, and I want to send a happy birthday because it's Teddy Swim's birthday today. Does that answer your first question?
I think it does. I thought about joining in, but like I just felt I was about to go into I felt my voice just crack just a little bit. I'm like, nope, I'm not going to go through second puberty right now. I'm going to let him just sing, go with his American Idol audition. What is your guilty pleasure band?
My guilty pleasure band?
Mm-hmm. Or artist?
It would have to be, the band would be Queen. And it would be one song that's been iconic for over 30 years that came to bite me in the butt when I did Kill Tony. We will rock you. For all the people in the hood in the streets, I'm sorry, but I love Queen and I love that song. Boom, boom, ch, boom, boom, ch. Buddy, you're a boy making, you know how it goes.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling like this episode is just going to get copyright stricken, but like all the singing that you're doing here. So this one's going to be interesting now. What's your favorite song to belt it out to, no matter how good or how bad you sound?
It's an old song. It's a thin line between love and hate. Ooh. And the reason why I like that song, because it's been like part of my life with me trying to find love. It goes love and hate. That would be it. Guilty pleasure.
If you could eat one meal for a week, what is it?
It would be smothered turkey wings. I love me some smothered turkey wings. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., I could say at the South. And people in the South, you could smother anything. Smothered mushrooms, smothered. You could smother a smother. I've seen on a menu smothered gravy. How do you smother gravy? But they would do it. Smothered turkey wings, mashed potatoes, and some corn. And that's simple, and that's what it'd be.
I feel like there's a Smothers Brothers joke there, but I can't think of it right now. And I know that as soon as we hang up, I'd be like, oh, there's the joke, and that's just going to be ruined from there on. What is your drink of choice?
Tito's.
Favorite superhero?
Robin.
To help settle a bet, do you think Mega Man, the 80s video game character, is a superhero?
I do.
Thank you. Favorite internet video?
My favorite internet video is a viral video that I was a part of when I did the Breakfast Club years ago. There was a funny moment when me and Charlamagne the God are falling out of our chairs laughing like crazy. And that happened like 8 years ago. And right now, when it comes to anybody posting anything funny, they use this iconic meme as punctuation for laughter. So that has to be, it's only 4 seconds, but that has to be my favorite internet video.
What are you watching right now on your streaming platforms?
Me.
You just watch it? You just like sit back and watch your old stand-up?
My guilty pleasure, and it really bites me in the butt, and they say don't do it. Joe Rogan told me don't read the comments, but man, it is so hard to stay away from that comment section.
I know. Every time, like, if I make like a YouTube video or something, and I they say, oh, don't look at the comments, and I'll look at it, and then it'll just be like somebody like saying like a disparaging comment. I'm like, well, that day's ruined.
Yeah, but the thing about it, usually, you usually get majority of it is good feedback. I don't know what it is that we really connect with. Like, Dave, like, I love you, I love you. Like, yeah. And it's like, just, yo, cringe, unsufferable. Can I get 30 seconds of my life back? You're like, who are you talking to? And then you go on their page and you realize this person with zero posts, you know what I mean, has five followers and following 3,000 people, and he's 14 years old.
I imagine like you get like you see those people and you have at least like 10 jokes in the bank just ready to rattle off on them.
Well, they don't make themselves. It's only on the internet. And the thing about it is like what I realized, it's so hard for me not to engage them, but that's all they want. They want some type of engagement. And a lot of times the trolls are people that want to do comedy, but don't have the balls to actually go through the open mics, go through meeting people, go through getting connected with these clubs. So there are people that want to do what we do, but they just don't have the balls to do it.
And finally, Donnell Rollins, give me your spiciest hot take.
My spiciest hot take?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have to do a quote that was a very popular phrase on the Chappelle Show, and I don't want to get myself in any trouble, but I'll plead the fifth. Fifth! You say five, I say fifth. F-I-F. Fifth. I plead the fifth.
Not one, not two, not
not
three.
One, not two, not three, not four. Fifth.
Is that the most quoted line you get from Chappelle's Show, or do you get the I'm rich word? No. I'm not allowed to say here.
Oh, man, it's everything. The most quotable thing that resonates with everybody is, and I'll say this, and it's recorded, and you can do what you want to do with it. I'm rich! That's it.
editing this is going to be so much fun. You can see him at the Comedy Zone October 3rd through the 5th. Tickets on sale now. Donnell Rollins, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for your time.